Aloha. Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns over the air and online at koacountry1077.com and at lava1053.com. Now, here's your host, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha. Good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. We're here on the radio every Sunday morning, 6:30 a.m. Koa Country, 107.7 FM, 8 a.m. Lava 105.3 FM. And podcasts are available of the Island Issues broadcast after they air, lava1053.com and koacountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. We've spent a whole lot of time lately talking about the infectious disease dengue fever, but there's a far worse disease on our island. Dengue fever is very unpleasant, but generally doesn't kill you. Rat lungworm disease, or angiostrongylus, can not only kill you, it can leave you neurologically impaired if you don't die. State Department of Health has been keeping statistics on rat lungworm disease since 2007, and from 2007 through 2014, they say that 42 people got rat lungworm disease. 91% of those were on Hawaii Island. I asked them several weeks ago for the updated statistics for 2015. So far, they have not provided that information. One of the problems with rat lungworm disease is unless it is reported by a doctor to the State Department of Health, it's not really known how many cases we have here. And rat lungworm is unusual, so it requires the doctor to know what they're looking for them to recognize it. Additionally, the number of people who are listed as dying from rat lungworm disease is minimal, if not zero, because unless rat lungworm disease or angiostrongylus appears on the death certificate, the person is not counted as dying from rat lungworm disease. But it is a bad disease. Senator Russell Ruderman has asked for $1 million this year through the state legislature to provide funding for research, education, prevention. So we need to re-educate ourselves on what rat lungworm disease is. So if we feel it's important, we can support this effort in the state legislature. The interview we're going to listen to today aired 1 year ago. We join the interview in progress as I talk about how some others describe rat lungworm disease. Although I tend to shy away from television programs that sensationalize things, Animal Planet talked about rat lungworm disease like this. The rat lungworm is one of the most feared parasites on the planet. It travels in the blood to the edge of the brain, then bursts through the brain's defensive lining, causing hemorrhaging and tissue damage, and that's pretty scary. I have three people with us today to tell us more, including whether that description from Animal Planet is accurate. Dr. Susan Jarvie is with University of Hawaii at Hilo College of Pharmacy, and I first started talking with Dr. Jarvie back in 2009 when I was doing some stories about rat lungworm disease for Hawaii Public Radio, because Dr. Jarvie is considered to be one of the world's foremost researchers of the disease, certainly the foremost in the United States. She's really the subject matter expert. Aloha, good morning, Dr. Jarvie.
Good morning, Sherry.
Marlena Dixon is with State Department of Health in Hilo. The State Department of Health collects the statistics on certain diseases, including this one, and is also responsible for regulating restaurants and upholding sanitation standards. Good morning. Aloha, Ms. Dixon.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And finally, Dr. John Martell is board certified in internal medicine and is a hospitalist, a doctor who practices out of a hospital at Hilo Medical Center. I was delighted that Dr. Martell could join us this morning because he's actually treated several cases of rat lungworm disease. Good morning. Aloha, Dr. Martell.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, Dr. Martell, you heard what I read from the Animal Planet website. How would you describe rat lungworm disease?
I have to say that Animal Planet is very, very good at their graphic descriptions. Unfortunately, it's all too accurate.
Well, that's what I was afraid based on everything that I've read from Dr. Jarvie's research. Dr. Martell, you have treated patients at Hilo Medical Center for this disease. What kind of symptoms do they exhibit if they catch rat lungworm disease?
That's one of the really tricky things about this disease, is that I've probably treated a dozen or so patients, and everybody presents with different symptoms. Usually when you think of rat lungworm disease, you think of meningitis, which is an inflammation around the brain. And the symptoms are usually headache, stiff neck, sensitivity to light, just generally feeling weak and tired.
Dr. Martell, are you talking about influenza or are you talking about meningitis and rat lungworm disease? Because the symptoms sound pretty much the same.
That's part of what makes it so tricky. When patients with the meningitis symptoms of this disease show up in the emergency room, they really don't know they're dealing with this disease. It could be the flu. It could be a migraine. It could be a bad hangover. You know, the symptoms just are not that specific. However, in the severe cases, often what we see are nerve pain. And it's a very specific pattern of nerve pain. People develop areas on their body that become exquisitely sensitive to touch. They can't wear socks. They can't have a sheet on them. The area will burn, will be incredibly sensitive, and then it'll go away. And you'll get another area that does exactly the same thing. And it becomes this constant movement of pain and sensitivity that is really, really, really difficult for the patients to tolerate.
Is that what would make you or any other doctor suspect rat lungworm disease? Is that the kind of question you would ask people?
The headache, when it's there, is helpful, but it certainly doesn't clinically help me pin the diagnosis down to rat lungworm disease. If they have the symptoms of nerve pain, especially if it moves, especially if there's skin sensitivity, then I'm two-thirds of the way there. And then I have to get a history of exposure, because without the history of exposure, I don't have the whole package and can't be really sure.
How do you actually test for this disease? How do you actually test to see if they really have it?
That's a problem, and it's a problem nationwide. It's actually an international problem in developing a quick, sensitive test that will tell you what's going on. Right now, we're actually limited to finding the picture that looks like rat lungworm disease and finding changes on their cerebral spinal fluid from a lumbar puncture, from a spinal tap, that show inflammatory cells called eosinophils. These cells tend to be associated with parasite infestations. So if we get the symptoms, the exposure, we do a spinal tap and we find the eosinophils, we're pretty sure.
So if you decide that somebody has rat lungworm disease or meningitis caused by rat lungworm disease, what is the standard treatment?
Also a very interesting question. Because if you go to the literature, the standard treatment is still under debate. Pain relief, obviously, that's top on the list. Relief from the nerve pain, if you can achieve it, is very difficult, but is really important for the well-being of the patient. Evidence shows that high doses of steroids like prednisone also shorten the duration of the symptoms and may improve the disease outcome a little bit. But that's still debated. Doing serial spinal taps every week or so, taking fluid off to relieve the pressure on the brain, definitely helps symptoms. And then the big point of debate is whether you use medicines to fight the worms or not. Because the steroids don't kill the worms. They just help the inflammation.
Well, what medicines kill the worms? And is that a really rough treatment on the patient?
The treatment itself is not particularly rough. There are a couple of options. We use albendazole, but there are other options available.
I don't know what albendazole is.
It's a specific anti-worm medicine.
Like I would give to my dog or cat if they had worms?
Actually, you could probably buy it down at Dell's Farm Supply.
Okay. Dr. Martell, for the rest of you, I think you all know, one of the reasons that I wanted to do this interview, even though I've done stories about rat lungworm disease before, is that I have a friend, a woman who lived in South Kona, and she contracted meningitis, which, as you've mentioned, is an inflammation of the brain. And then her family told me after it was confirmed that she did have rat lungworm disease, which Department of Health has confirmed. And she's believed to have gotten the disease around November 12th. And she died December 20th. So, Dr. Martell, what is the normal progression? If somebody is exposed to rat lungworm disease and they actually get it, what's the progression of symptoms? What do people feel, experience, and see?
In part, it depends on how big an exposure to worms they had. If you only have a few worms that you ate somehow on your lettuce or you ingested a slug and there were very few worms, you might get very few symptoms. Just looking at the patients who have severe disease, the progression is usually that about 3 to 5 days after the ingestion, after they eat something that has a large volume of worms, they get stomach pains and cramps. And we had a couple of our patients show up the first time to the emergency room because of the stomach pains and cramps. That, to be graphic, is the worms burrowing from your intestines into your bloodstream. That goes away. There's a delay of a few days while the worms get to your brain. Then you start getting the headache and the stiff neck as they burrow through the lining of the brain to get into the fluid that surrounds your brain. Then you start getting the migrating nerve pain, and whether you get better in a week with minimal difficulty or you get severe disease and wind up incapacitated in intensive care probably relates to how many worms, but there may be a host susceptibility to. Some people may be more susceptible to developing severe symptoms. We just don't know.
I know that Department of Health has not so far attributed actual cause of death to many, if any, people because of rat lungworm disease. But pretty clearly, people who have had it have died, maybe from something else that was triggered from that. But any idea, Dr. Martell, from your perspective, how many people who get rat lungworm disease actually do die? And if they don't die, what usually happens then?
I really can't answer the percentage because even though East Hawaii is a hotspot, we still have a relatively small number of cases.
Right.
If you go look at data from Taiwan or Thailand where they have large numbers of cases, they clearly do die, but it's not a large percentage. Leaving that aside, there is still a tremendous burden of illness in the ones that don't. We have had 4 or 5 of our patients in the last 6, 7 years wind up in intensive care on a ventilator requiring maximum support, and several of those are still severely impaired and will be for the rest of their life.
Oh my gosh. I'd like to turn to Dr. Susan Jarvie. You're a researcher. What got you interested in Angiostrongylus, or rat lungworm disease?
I was invited to a meeting. It was an international meeting on rat lungworm in 2011 over to Honolulu. And this is an international group of the major rat lungworm researchers in the world. I met Kay Howe at that meeting, and I met her son, Graham. And I had heard about rat lungworm disease working with USDA before, but I'd never realized how severe it could be, how disabling it could be, until I heard their story. That's when we started working together. And Kay is now a graduate student working with me in the lab on rat lungworm issues.
Okay, Dr. Jarvie, from your perspective, explain to us exactly what this disease is, rat lungworm disease.
Rat lungworm disease, it's caused by a nematode, a worm. And as Dr. Martell explained, it enters through your intestines, goes through the bloodstream, eventually ends up in the central nervous system and the brain.
How does this occur? Talk about the progression. You know, we've talked about semi-slugs, not in this conversation, but semi-slugs passing this on. So just talk about how the slug gets it, if it's the slug, and how the what are these worms? Give us a little more detail, because I really want us all to understand what this really horrible disease is.
Sure. The definitive host, or the host in which the worm replicates in, is the rat. And the rat gets infected generally by eating infected slugs or snails. The normal cycle is the nematode will reproduce in the rat. It goes through the same types of processes that it does in humans, ends up in the brain. But in rats, and in most cases not in humans, the worms migrate back down to the heart and lungs, and that's where they reproduce. And then they lay eggs. The eggs eventually move to the trachea and are swallowed. And those first stage larvae then are excreted in the feces of the rat. So rat poop is the thing, and slugs and snails love to eat rat poop. So the normal cycle is from the rat to the slug and the snail, and then in the slug or the snail, it develops from the L1 stage to the L3 stage. And that L3 stage is the stage that's infective to rats, but it's also infective to humans, dogs. We've had a lot of cases in horses that have had to be put down because the slug or possibly even the slime trail from the slug or the snail is infective.
And a brief interruption to remind you, this is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. Island Issues is on every Sunday, 6:30 a.m. Coa Country, 107.7 FM, 8 a.m. Lava 105.3 FM. And you can get the podcasts of this online at lava1053.com or coacountry1077.com. Today we are rebroadcasting an interview from a year ago recorded at UH Hilo College of Pharmacy by Dave Corrigan of Big Island Video News, all about rat lungworm disease or angiostrongylus. That is truly one of the worst diseases known, and it is here on our island. It is far worse than dengue because it can leave you dead or neurologically impaired. Dr. Susan Jarvie of UH Hilo College of Pharmacy is probably the foremost researcher in rat lungworm in this country. Dr. John Martell of Hilo Medical Center has treated several cases. Marlena Dixon is with State Department of Health. So far, State Department of Health has not agreed to fund Dr. Jarvie's research. So State Senator Russell Ruderman has introduced a bill to provide $1 million for research, prevention, education. It's important for us to understand this disease and how to prevent it. My next question goes to Dr. Jarvie. How does a person get rat lungworm disease?
In many cases, they don't really know. Some of the ones that we've spoken with think they got it from the slug or the snail. These slugs can be tiny.
Meaning they ate the slug or the snail?
A slug or the snail or a part of a slug or a snail. Flatworms are really dangerous because if they're in a salad, for example, they kind of dissolve. So you might not even see them. Or, you know, these tiny, tiny little semi-slugs. You might not even see them.
Can it come from the slime of the slug?
We've done some testing on that. The amount of larva that's present in the slime is like tenfold less than what's in the slug itself. So the slime, it's questionable whether it would actually have enough parasites in it to be infective. But of course, you don't want to take that chance.
I have read that the epicenter of rat lungworm disease in the United States is this island, specifically East Hawaii, specifically the Puna District. Talk about this.
We've had rat lungworm in the state. You know, it was discovered back in China back in 1935. And then with the shipping industry and the rats and everything traveling all over the world, came to the Pacific Islands in about 1960. We had our first recorded cases in 1959, 1960. And then there was a real gap in a couple of decades where you didn't hear, there's not a lot of literature. Then the semi-slug was introduced to the island in 2004.
And what is a semi-slug?
From an evolutionary standpoint, it's between a slug and a snail. It's a type of slug that has it looks like a little fingernail on its back. It's a residual shell. So the semi-slug is such an efficient intermediate host, and it climbs everywhere. It'll climb in your windows. They move really fast, but they're a very efficient host. We've done some testing. We've had some semi-slugs that have had close to 10,000 larvae in them.
Oh, my gosh. Why is the slug mostly in the Puna District? Do we know how it specifically got to Puna and why it seems to stay mostly in Puna, if that's true?
It is spreading. We find all over the islands. It was probably introduced into Puna or Pahoa, maybe in vegetation. We just really don't know. But that's where it was first introduced, and that's where it's spreading from.
It is said by some that this disease can only exist on organic produce. What's your comment on that? Is that true?
No, I don't think so. No. It could be anywhere a slug can go, on any type of fruit, any type of vegetable.
So basically, the message is wash everything.
Wash everything.
Okay, Marlena Dixon, of the 42 people I counted who were shown on the Department of Health website as known to have rat lungworm disease, and I say known because my guess is, from what Dr. Martell has said, there's probably people who've had it who've not been identified as having it. Do you know how many of those people were either from Hawaii Island or contracted it because of something that they ate or did on Hawaii Island?
Yes. We track cases by county, and we began tracking in 2007. Published, however, we have 2007 through 2013. So based on those numbers, Hawaii County had 91.4% cases statewide.
And an interjection, the number 42 is through the end of 2014. I'm re-airing this interview from a year ago. I asked State Department of Health several weeks ago if they could provide a 2015 number. I don't yet have it, but indications are it's still a Hawaii Island issue. Now, I've been told that the slug larvae might exist in catchment water. Is that true?
We are currently doing some studies to determine that. There's historical literature that documents that it can survive in water. So we're currently doing some studies to evaluate that. Kay Howe, who's a student in my lab, has looked at rainwater catchment. And the slugs themselves, if you drown them in a little tube of rainwater, we wanted to see if the larva escaped from the slug, if the slug needs to be chopped up, or if just natural decomposition is enough for the slugs to escape, and then that's certainly true. And also she wanted to see if the larva go to the bottom or the middle of the top. Thinking about catchment systems, usually draw from the bottom, and over 90% of them go right to the bottom. In her studies, she has found that these larvae, and some of them have to be angiostrongylus. They're hard to identify morphologically, but we have a molecular test that we're using. In one of her studies, she brought it out to 53 days, and there were still a lot of over 200 larvae in that water sample. Now, I can't say all of them are angiostrongylus campanensis, but we did this molecular test that shows that there is angiostrongylus campanensis in there.
Run us through again, how do humans typically become infected?
By consuming the larvae, one way or another.
Okay, Dr. Martell, any comments on that?
The problem in part is that the exposure can be accidental, and people tend to forget. So they come in and they go, I have no clue how I got this. And they actually don't. So they start looking for unusual or different ways they could have contracted it. But pretty much the evidence is clear that you have to ingest it. You have to eat it. It has to be in water or food.
Can it be passed from human to human?
Absolutely not.
It's interesting because it's listed on the Department of Health website under infectious diseases, which is why I had difficulty finding it, because I thought of an infectious disease as something one would pass. Dr. Jarvie, I read in some of your writings that the rats actually live with the rat lungworm parasites, and they don't seem to be bothered by it. So what are you learning from that?
We completed two trials in rats in the last year and a half, working with the USDA APHIS. And one of them was a vaccine trial working with a colleague from Spain who developed a vaccine against a very related parasite, Angiostrongylus costarricensis, instead of cantonensis. And so we wanted to see if this vaccine was effective against Angiostrongylus cantonensis here in Hawaii. And long story short, it's not, as far as we can tell. The same number of adult worms were found in the hearts and lungs of vaccinated versus non-vaccinated rats. To follow up on that, though, we're running some immunological studies because I want to know, did the rat produce any antibodies against that vaccine? And if it did, then it might be worth pursuing further. Change the dose of the vaccine, adjust the variables a little bit. But the rats in that trial, the highest number of adult worms that we pulled out of any rat was 57. 57 worms. Now, in the rat, it goes in through the intestines, travels up, goes in the brain, it develops further in the brain, then it moves back down as a subadult to the heart and lungs where it reproduces. So if that rat had 57 worms in its heart and lungs, it had 57 worms in its brain. And we didn't see any real abnormal behaviors. So that rat was surviving with 57 worms in its brain, like a normal rat, as far as we could tell, a normal rat is.
Where, and as far as people are concerned, from what you've said, and actually from knowing what happened to my friend, there's a lot of pain. It's excruciating, is what I was told.
There's a key difference here between rats and humans. In rats, the worms grow up and they leave. They go away down to the heart and lungs. In humans, for whatever reason, and we really don't know why, they can't get out of your brain. So they grow up, they become adults, and then they try and get out of your brain. One thing about these worms is that they are very mobile. They move a lot. So if you could think of having 50 adult worms in your brain that can't get out and don't like it and are moving around all over the place, you really get an idea why people suffer so badly where maybe rats don't.
Wow, this is so daunting just to even hear about this. So let's get to the real heart of the issue. What can be done to prevent rat lungworm disease? And I'd like to start with you, Dr. Jarvie.
What we have developed, and we've done a lot of educational outreach, one of our approaches is to use keiki as educators, so that we developed this curriculum that we've got working in several of our East Hawaii schools now. And it involves a book called The Mystery of Rat Lungworm Disease. We piloted it in 4 schools. The teachers love it because it's all to science standards that they have to cover anyway, so it's not additional work for them. The kids love it because it's a story, and they can color, they learn all about life cycles and what rat lungworm is all about and how they can avoid getting infected.
And how is that?
Check your food, check your produce very, very carefully. Clean it very, very carefully. Lettuce, I tear apart leaf by leaf, or cook it.
As far as washing lettuce is concerned, because it sounds like a lot of this may come from lettuce, specifically, do you know if people need to wash lettuce with substance in it, meaning vinegar or salt or produce wash or just plain water? What do you know about that?
Well, we've started some studies, again, looking at different solutions, because a lot of people ask us, what do we wash our veggies in? And so I can't tell you what to wash them in right now, because we haven't finished those studies. I can tell you what doesn't work. Hydrogen peroxide and vinegar. Remember, these guys live in our stomach. Our stomach acid is acid. So acids don't even touch these guys. So vinegar doesn't do a thing. Hydrogen peroxide straight out of the bottle didn't seem to affect them at all.
Marlena Dixon from the State Department of Health, what do you tell people as far as how to wash our produce?
Similar to what Dr. Driver just mentioned, like with lettuce, you want to tear it off leaf by leaf, rinse it under a steady stream of water, visually inspecting it as you do so. I tend to, you know, rub my fingers all over each leaf. Time consuming, but very well worth it. And again, there is no approved product right now that we can recommend for washing produce.
You know, and we're talking right now about what we do at home. Marlena Dixon, your department is responsible also for restaurant sanitation. What are you telling restaurants as far as what they need to do as far as cleaning produce?
Our sanitation branch visits restaurants routinely 3 times a year. And each time they go into the restaurants, they provide them with a fact sheet information and then verbally speak with them about how to properly wash produce or rinse produce, excuse me. We mentioned, you know, leaf by leaf if possible, steady streams of water, visually inspecting. So we give them the same information that we give the general public just on a continuous basis.
How do you notify restaurants about rat lungworm disease specifically? Is this something you specifically tell them about?
It depends on the situation. If we have a case that kind of points toward a certain establishment, we will specifically go in there and do an education just on rat lungworm disease. But generally, they go in and they discuss sanitation procedures across the board. They do mention specific rat lung disease because it's not always on their radar. It's not something everyone thinks about. It's getting better and better as far as, you know, understanding the situation, but it's a continuous thing. So yeah, we do specifically mention that, but it does come with standard sanitation procedures as well.
Well, I've started asking restaurants, since I had this experience of losing my friend, I've started asking them, how do you wash your produce? And when I asked the banquet captain at the Sheraton Kona, Jeffrey, he was amazing. He said, oh, I went to a food safety class that the Department of Health put on, and this is how we're supposed to wash, and that's a terrible disease, and this is how we prevent it. He was totally on it. And I understand you do have food safety classes, but I also understand that it is not a requirement for restaurants to have their employees take those classes. So why not?
To make them a requirement requires us to change the law. And from what I understand, the Department of Health has introduced legislation, and it's been shot down by lobbyists in the food industry. So we've continually tried to make it part of our administrative rules and part of Hawaii state law, but so far we've been unsuccessful. However, we're not going to stop trying.
I've asked a few restaurants, and for example, the coffee shack in South Kona, they said exactly what you said. They take each lettuce leaf apart. They actually use salt water. They rinse it. They wipe it off. They plunge it in ice water. They really do a lot of washing of their produce, which made me feel comfortable. But strangely, I went to one restaurant and I asked them that question, and they asked why I wanted to know. I told them specifically why I wanted to know. The answer their chef gave me was, we hose the lettuce down, eat a salad at your own risk. Needless to say, I did not eat a salad at that restaurant, but I think it's something that people should not be afraid to ask the question. Department of Health, how do you educate the general public about this disease, if you do?
We do a number of things. We offer educational presentations for free when requested. I do go out and do some trainings. We have fact sheets online that we also offer to the public. Every now and then, we do health advisories in the local newspaper. We don't want to cause panic by continuously printing it, but we do put advisories out there along with prevention methods in the advisory. Again, our sanitation branch works with the food establishments, not just restaurants, but also farmers markets, food trucks, so every type of food establishment you can think of. And then we also work with the documented cases. We do an extensive history with them, try to pinpoint where they may have been exposed. As Dr. Martel says, it's very difficult to try to do that sometimes. But you'd be surprised. Some people are very on it. They remember buying produce from a certain vendor at a certain market. And we do go out. We'll send a sanitation inspector out. We'll open up bags of lettuce and we'll talk to the vendor about it. So it's a kind of across the board. We do mainly education. Mm-hmm. Again, prevention is kind of the key here with Rockland Worm Disease. And so right now, those are our activities.
We're at the end of our time together, and I'd like to ask each one of you to give us some final comments. And part of the final comment is, should we be afraid to eat fresh produce from Hawaii Island? Marlena Dixon.
My answer is no, if you're careful. I purchase local produce myself from the farmers markets here. And I know that I wash them properly, so I'm comfortable when I eat my own salads. As far as my own personal consumption, no, I'm not afraid. However, I can't always say that about everybody else. So at home, we absolutely eat fresh produce all the time.
Dr. Susan Jarvie, you're a researcher. You've known about this disease for quite a while. What are your words of wisdom for us?
I do eat local produce if I prepare it myself or if it's prepared by somebody I know is really aware. I don't eat salads out unless if I know the owner of the restaurant and that they're very aware and if I know how their lettuce and food are prepared.
Keep on doing your research because we really need to get this problem solved, don't we?
We do, and we need funding.
College of Pharmacy, huh?
College of Pharmacy, most of the funding that I've received so far has come from small internal grants to the University of Hawaii, and I've received two grants from the Hawaii Community Foundation. I have yet to receive a large state or federal grant. I've been declined several times. And so that's the hang-up right now. I'm very thankful Hawaii Community Foundation is funding. They funded the vaccine trial, and they're funding our current study looking at actually trying to get a better handle on the prevalence, the number of people out there on the east side of Hawaii who are walking around with antibodies against rat lungworm.
So if I got the disease in some way but maybe didn't get sick or maybe did get sick, do I have antibodies against it?
You may.
But we don't know for sure.
No, for sure.
Dr. John Martel, Hilo Medical Center, what words of wisdom can you share with our audience?
To start with your first question, my wife's a vegetarian and without the farmer's market, she'd starve. So we wash our vegetables, we're careful, we're not living in fear. Aside from that, I just want to emphasize that this is a completely preventable disease. It would make me enormously happy if I never saw another case. And I think that's just the bottom line.
And a special thank you to Dr. Susan Jarvie, to Dr. John Martel, to Marlena Dixon for sharing their mana'o about rat lungworm disease. This interview was recorded about a year ago. Dave Corrigan, BigIslandVideoNews.com, provided the sound. The bottom line for us is, wash our produce extremely well. Be confident in how your food was washed, and that can prevent rat lungworm disease. This is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. I'll see you next Sunday morning for another Island Issue. And until then, please let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahui ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us info@lava1053.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Island's Mahalo Multimedia.